team needs a quarterback that can move the ball. Even when we get in field goal range, we get a big turnover, I turn the ball right back over. Unacceptable.
Anything you want to put, I'll put it on me. I'm going to be the leader of this group. I'm going to take it head on.
If you can't figure out at home how frustrating it is to be 1-5, then I can't help you.
You are now listening to The Waggle, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
That's right. This is the Waggle Podcast. I am Donovan Bennett.
Are you?
I think so.
Is there proof of that?
I mean, I have my ID.
Are you a Canadian citizen?
I sure am.
Can we prove that?
I don't have my citizenship on me.
Okay.
Then I have my license. Does that work?
It does. It does.
You are Davis Sanchez. Yeah.
Good morning, Deej.
You are a Canadian citizen.
I am. You can tell by my accent, you hoser.
Are you a CFL diehard? Can you be a diehard if you played?
Yeah, because I was a diehard before I played. That's the thing. Wait, okay. I grew up on this game. My balls are bigger. Did I just say that?
You did.
Well, they are.
And that's too much.
Because the NFL ball is not as big as our balls.
Was that the Lisco era, correct?
I believe that would have been a Michael Lisco era. Yeah.
What was radically Canadian? Was that Larry Smith?
Ooh, no, I think that's going to be post-Larry Smith, I think. But could be.
Both were.
I had one of those shirts when I was gunned up. I remember I had the sleeves cut off a radically Canadian shirt. I used to rock it quite often. Now it's full sleeves for sure.
This is the Waggle Podcast. It is radically Canadian, where one of the host's balls are bigger. Well, it is the podcast for CFL diehards. And speaking of which, let's do some housekeeping because I got a little something for them. Until next Tuesday, they have to enter with our friends at Red Tag. This is the fourth year, I don't know if you knew this, that our CFL's travel partners, redtag.ca, that's right, redtag.ca, is going to give our fans, the diehards, the radically Canadian ones, the opportunity to win an ultimate CFL fan trip. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. It includes 3 games in 3 cities in 3 days. All you got to do, go to redtag.ca/CFL. You have until July 31st to enter, so don't procrastinate like me in university. Get it done early. The trip will take place on week 10, where the winners will watch the Bombers, who may be still undefeated by then. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Game of the week, game of the year.
Against the Lions, who Mike Riley may still be agitated by then. We'll talk about that later. And then you're going to head to Toronto. You're going to see the Eskimos take on the Argonauts. You're going to see all the sights and sounds of this beautiful city. And then you finish off in the nation's capital. Make a trip to Parliament. In between seeing the Red Blacks and Ticats, get yourself a beaver tail. Red Tag is hooking you up.
When I said game of the year, I meant the week 7 Hamilton-Winnipeg matchup is thus far the game of the year. That's what I meant. Not that one, but it could be by that time. But I saw the Red Tag fan experience last year on CFL's Instagram. Mm-hmm. It looks like the ultimate Canadian fan experience. Looks like a cool deal. 3 games, 3 days, 3 cities. I could rock that.
I was gonna say I'm upset that we are.
Go to redtag.ca and sign up now. You get time is ticking.
I'm upset that are we
going?
Enter. No.
No, we're not. Right?
That would not be.
I think Brody went last year.
Did she?
Yeah.
Of course she did. It would be more of a contest prize to hang out with Brody than it would.
I think I'm more fun, but whatever. It's your opinion.
We'll let the viewers decide and the listeners decide. You know who's been fun to watch? Big Play VA.
Mm-hmm.
Verdon Adams Jr. He has his fourth straight start playing lights out. I'm just going to put it down right now. Normally, we kind of recap all the games and kind of talk about this game, that game. Kind of want to get off that because, to me, this week was all about quarterbacks. So I want to have a bigger picture quarterback conversation. But okay, we have to start with him in that game. 191 he passed for, which is not that much, passing TD, but a receiving TD. But to me, the fact that he's still playing the position and playing it well. Remember, this is a guy that they wanted to move to receiver last year and was almost out of the league in general. Hamilton brought in Johnny Manziel. They didn't have room for him in Hamilton. They tried to trade him. They couldn't. They cut him. Montreal picks him up. He gets a start with Montreal. What happens? People are chanting, Johnny, Johnny. we want Johnny.
And VA was chapped.
Of course, wouldn't you be? He took a shot at those very same fans. Has since apologized. And I think what we've seen is he has matured with those experiences and with his play. But Johnny Football is out of the league now. Probably out of football now, if we're being honest. And since 2016, Adam Jr. is 6-2 as a starter. All other Montreal QBs combined are 12-39. Have they found their guy? A guy who's taken a long road to get to this point and still young. Have they found their guy?
They found someone that they believe in, that the team rallies around. I think just as important, Deej, they found a guy who has tremendous talent, who now is coupled with a coach that he trusts, that trusts him, and there's one voice, because that same quarterback coach is also his head coach, and that's Kahari Jones. So, you know, with that combination, it gives them hope, and you see VA, and he looks confident. He said it. He's always said that he believed in himself. He's a confident guy. He wasn't always confident in his preparation or the way he was prepared going into games as a professional, and now he is. So whether Kahari simplified things for him, whether he's put more time into the film room learning, whatever it is, having him with command of an offense, with his skill set, and a bunch of young playmakers around him who are doing their thing, starting with Willie Stan, it's a good combination.
So the key word that you said that I want to pick up on is hope. And to me, sports is about hope on different levels, right? High-end hope as a fan, as a team, as an organization, you can win a championship. So Winnipeg, in that city, right, that's what they're thinking about. They're hoping this is our year, finally. On the back end, you hope what you're seeing is the embryonic stages, the building blocks to sustain success. And so do most people think Montreal is going to win the Grey Cup this year? No. But does that fan base, does that building, does that organization now have some hope? I think yes.
Sure. It's, no, you don't think yes. For sure they do. Yes.
Which is a different conversation than we were having a couple weeks ago. And it's funny. Sometimes the struggle is beautiful. And, you know, Sherman no longer there. Manziel no longer there. Kavis Reed no longer there. Their hope last year was those three guys at a press conference saying it has to work.
Right.
It didn't work.
Yeah, that's right.
But now, theoretically, sooner rather than later, you'll have a new ownership group, some fresh eyes and some fresh ideas and maybe some fresh money. You have a new head coach. Not planned that way, but you've lucked into someone who looks like they have control of the room. And you have a new quarterback. The Alouettes have hope again.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And let's give credit to the defense as well. They held a good-esque team and a great, can we say great offense? Yeah, very good. I don't want to say great. A very good offense through the first 5 weeks to 10 points. That's a performance that I think they would take, and a group of guys that plays the way they need to play. They're young, they're fast, they're physical, and they're playing for each other. It's complementary football is an overused term, but it fits with this Owls team. It fits completely because they're getting it done. They're finding ways, like you said. What were Vernon's numbers? He didn't throw for a ton of yards. But you know, he had 50 something yards rushing. He found ways to convert in big situations. And I'm just pull up his numbers right now. But I mean, not those aren't. Look at that: 115 for 22, 191 yards and one touchdown. Now we're sitting here talking about what a great performance from VA. It wasn't a great statistical performance, but he's doing converting big first downs. I think they had a sequence in the second half where they went down and had three long drives that basically kept the Eskimos offense off the field. That's why they had so much success, because they were able to keep those guys, the Eskimos, from getting into any sort of rhythm. But anyway, converters in first downs and moving the sticks is what they're doing in a complimentary way.
Yes. The homie at Sportsnet, Tim McAuliffe has a saying about stats. Stats are like bikinis or Speedos. They show you a lot. They don't show you everything.
And good one. I like that.
Feel free to take it from Tim McAuliffe, who I took it from. And I the stats for VA weren't amazing, but when you look at the situation, when you look at the fact that he was down his top two receivers, when you look at the fact that Edmonton came in as the best scoring defense in the league. Well, I don't think they're the best defense. Part of the reason they're the best scoring defense is because they're not on the field that much because their offense is so great. I think if we're looking at the two deep, I'd take Winnipeg's defense over Edmonton's. I maybe even might take Saskatchewan's. Soon, we might be saying we'll take Calgary's. But needless to say, Edmonton's defense is pretty good. And this is a team coming off a 10-day layoff who's getting ready for you and rested for you. Yep. So the fact that he managed the game and made throws when he needed to, but also kept them on schedule with his ability to pull it down and run, and complemented with Stanback running the ball. I do think it was a good game with him at the helm, no matter of the stats. Here's his last three starts. Hamilton, 14 of 25, 202 yards. Ottawa, 23 of 30, 327 yards and two TDs. And then Edmonton, 15 of 22. As you mentioned, 191 yards and one TD. Even though the numbers were the smallest in the victory over Edmonton, that's the one that I came away the most impressed.
Because of the defense?
Because of the defense and because you're taking Cunningham and Posey off the field.
Right.
And you're still throwing guys open. Because against Ottawa, he put up 327, but he also had some throws that you have to make wide open.
Yep.
Busted coverage, big explosive plays that gave him a lot of yards.
There were mistakes made this game. I mean, I think he had two interceptions that were called off by penalties.
Mm-hmm.
But it's fine. It's not. No one's asking Vernon Adams to play mistake-free football. Asking him, and that's not how they're going to win. He's not going to be a game manager. He's going to have to make plays, and he's going to have to find ways to, like I said, extend drives. But I'm with you that I am impressed that playing a good defense that's coming off essentially a bye, 10 days rest, and now they've also had 3 weeks to look at the film on what you're doing and get a game plan together to stop you. So that makes it even more difficult to have success than they did. So kudos to the Owls, the 3-0. That's the first time since 2012 that they've been above 500. And that season they finished above 500. And that was Anthony Calvillo's last year. So
crazy.
They're on pace to they continue the way they are. They're going to have the best record they've had since 2012. That's a long time ago.
He got lucky in that those picks he threw didn't count. But in his last three starts for VA, no interceptions, which is why they're playing their best football since AC. We've had this entire conversation. And we haven't mentioned the leading rusher in the league in William Stanback, who's averaging 6.7 yards a carry. And again, that really helps your quarterback when on first down, you can reverse pivot, hand it to him, and he's giving you second and four, second and three. I want to have a more theoretical question because I was thinking of their team. And I'm thinking of William Stanback as maybe the best running back in the league. I'd probably take Andrew Harris because I've seen him do it for a while and he does a bunch of things for you, but he's in the upper echelon of running backs.
Sure, yeah.
Vern Adams Jr., we're happy that he's keeping his offense on the field, but we would not say at this point he's in the upper echelon of quarterbacks.
Agree.
But the most important player on that team, maybe even the most valuable, the one that we're talking about, and the person that we could see being in that franchise longest is Vernon Adams Jr. If we were to say, pick someone on the Alouettes who could have a Hall of Fame career, we would pick Vernon Adams Jr. probably before we picked Stanback. And I say all that to say, I grew up watching the game, loving running backs, right? Pinball was my guy. Right. The great running back in that time for the Alouettes was Mike Pringle, Hall of Famer. Even though Tracy Ham was great, when you talk about the Alouettes, you talk about Pringle and then Ham. Football has changed in a way where the Alouettes have the leading rusher in the league, and yet we know that their value is based off of their quarterback, a quarterback who is in the middle of the pack. And so that had me thinking. Basically, I'm just revealing my stream of consciousness to you, thinking about this. Who's the next Hall of Fame running back we're ever going to see?
It's difficult.
Are we
the life? The life of a running back makes it really difficult to be a Hall of Fame running back.
Like Andrew,
it's Andrew Harris.
Harris, and that's it.
Yeah,
but
Andrew Harris is already a Hall of Fame running back.
You think so? Done.
Yeah, he
doesn't play another game.
I have to look. I have to compare the stats. I mean, but the reality is he's got some juice left in the leg, so we don't have to. Hopefully, we don't have to ever answer that question if he's done now. But I have to look at the stats to see. But he's. If you ask me to bet money on it, 50-50 or 1-to-1 odds, I would put money down right now that Andrew Harris is a Hall of Famer. Yeah.
See, I could say I know
John Cornish is a Hall of Famer. Look at the numbers. Andrew Harris has had a better career than John Cornish.
That's facts. I mean, I think John Cornish helped usher in a wave of thinking that allowed Andrew Harris to succeed. You don't have to ask me. Andrew Harris is the one who said that. But that is a great point. But those Calgary teams were dominant, though. And so I think, obviously, a ring would help Andrew Harris's Hall of Fame candidacy. But I do think he's a Hall of Famer. But I don't think there's another back in the league where that's the case. Name another position. Quarterbacks. I can think of multiple guys. Levi Mitchell, if he never throws another pass.
You can only think of two guys.
For quarterback?
Yes.
And Riley?
Bo and Riley.
Yes.
Don't say anything silly now. Don't say anything silly. Please. Talking about Hall of Fame quarterbacks. There's not multiple. There's two.
There's two. Okay. Two right now. Yeah. But I'm saying.
Well, I guess two is multiple.
Yes. But I'm saying I could foresee.
Whoa.
I could foresee a situation where there are other guys in the league who are Hall of Famers. Like I could foresee at the end of his career, Trevor Harris could be a Hall of Famer. I could see it. He wins a ring or two, continues to throw for 5,000 yards. I could see it. There is not another running back in this league that I could foresee a situation.
You
where
could
they're
make
a Hall
whether
of
your argument's warranted or not. You could at least make that argument.
Like Sinopoli, I could foresee him being a Hall of Famer.
Right. Yeah.
There is not. I'm not saying he's one today.
Sure.
There's not another running back in this league where I have to lay money.
It's the position, though. I mean, it's.
But that's a former running back. Like, there's a small tear that's playing on my eye.
Tear of love for Andrew Harris or a tear of sadness because it's so hard to be a Hall of Fame running back.
Sadness.
So respect to those guys. Respect to Stanback and C.J. Gable. William Powell, these guys who have continuously done it, put up numbers. That's credit to those guys. Brandon Rutley too, big game for the BC Lions last week. He looked. Jeremiah Johnson looked good also with Montreal. We didn't mention him. He had six carries, averaged 6.5 a carry, and coming in and being part of that three-headed rushing monster with VA and Stanback and himself. So actually, William Stanback last game only averaged 3.5 yards a carry, and Jeremiah averaged 6.5 on six touches. So anyway, that's
I think that's part of the problem, though. I think Calgary has shown it doesn't necessarily matter who's back there, and not even that they'll go out and find other backs. They'll have multiple backs at the same time that'll carry that load, and thus no one player is getting enough carries for us to consider them worthy. There isn't a, I suppose, two down back anymore. I think the shuttling of backs in is why the conversation has changed. But that's just me. I just need to work that out with you.
That's a good matchup. Where are you going, DJ? We got at least that one matchup is a great one this week. But are we moving forward or are we going back?
No, I mean, let's go back a little bit before we move forward because there's another theoretical conversation I want to have. And we talked about Vernon Adams Jr. taking care of the football. No one was doing that at a better rate than Trevor Harris until this week when he was picked off for the first time this year by Greg Reed, ended up having two INTs, 29-43 for 271. Not bad numbers, but aren't the numbers that we're accustomed to seeing from him.
Right.
And we had some frustrated quarterbacks this week. Mike Riley, who is, you know, leads the league in being sacked, 31 for 40, 346 yards, a TD and INT, and a rushing TD in a loss. Macbeth, Bethel Thompson, of the McLeod fame, 32 of 42. He completed 76% of his passes for 343 yards and two TDs. If you had him in fantasy, you were happy. It's up to you, threw for four INTs and lost. And the game wasn't overly close at any point. All three guys were very frustrated in their comments to the media, but they all rang a little different to me. Let's allow the listeners to listen to them first. So let's start with Bethel Thompson talking about the fact that he was struggling throwing the football.
Special teams did everything to win. Everything they can. O-line did everything to win. Receivers did everything they could to win. Backs did everything they could to win. If you have a quarterback that turns the ball over four times, you're not going to win football games. It's flat out. When you have a quarterback that turns the ball over four times, you're not going to win football games. So until the quarterback's play starts getting better, this team's not going to win. You get better, man. Play better football. Just the way it is. This team needs a quarterback that can move the ball. You can protect the ball. Even when we get in field goal range, we get a big turnover, I turn the ball right back over. Unacceptable. Completely unacceptable. Can't turn the ball over four times to win a football game.
All right, now here is Trevor Harris taking some ownership or trying to kind of and saying that he's going to be the leader of the football team.
It's professional football, and it's a long season, and you're going to have these games where you walk away saying we didn't play well enough, and today's definitely one of those. Not our best, and you know, I'll put anything you want to put, I'll put it on me. I'm going to be the leader of this group. I'm going to take it head on, and we're going to get better from this. I can guarantee you that.
Okay, and lastly, Mike Riley, who was frustrated with how often he's being asked if the BC Lions losing is frustrating.
If you can't figure out at home how frustrating it is to be 1-5, then I can't help you, you know. I mean, it's quite obvious that that's a frustrating situation, but nobody's going to feel sorry for us, so we got to get back on a horse and try to figure it out. We got these same guys in a week, and another opportunity. Got to correct the mistakes that were made if we want to have a different outcome.
Now, three different quarterbacks in three totally different situations, having differing success, although the team success was not there this week. You were in locker rooms at this level. I just find that as a player, hearing it, if I was another guy, kind of annoying for two of the three of those guys. Like, for McLeod to be like, I'm struggling completing passes. I need to be better. Yeah, thanks. You know who knows that? We all know that. Your yards are coming when games are no longer close. And it's not even about your ability to complete passes. It's your ability to make decisions to keep us in the game. It's the passes that you don't make when Darrell Walker is running wide open and you're throwing to a check down. It's the fact that you're throwing to him in double coverage when you have a check down and it's first down, but when it's second and long, you're hitting the check down.
What is him being transparent or being open and honest about his struggles and taking ownership of that completely? Why does that bother? I like that. Actually, when he said that, McLeod Bethel Thompson, when he said, hey, the quarterback, he was referring to himself, the quarterback has got to be better. The special teams did their thing. Defense did their thing. The offensive line blocked.
I don't know.
The quarterback's got to be better.
Did their thing,
I'm just saying this is what McLeod Bethel Thompson said.
I'm just telling you.
But yeah, fair enough. The quarterback's got to be better. And for me, he was being real in that situation. I don't think he was being a phony. And a lot of times you'll hear that. And they're saying this to deflect or seem like they're taking ownership. McLeod Bethel Thompson was saying, this one's on me, guys. I wasn't good enough. Whether you know it or not, DJ, or the fans know it or not, that's not the point. The point is he's saying it's on him. He's got to be better. If I was his teammate or a coach of his, I like what he said. I do. I don't like his play. But I respect him. I respect what he says, what he said. Definitely, I'll take it.
To me, say less. Because it's not just about this game. Like, this has been the entire experience.
So he's frustrated, and he's frustrating. So how about that? Okay, so can we move to the I'll give an example.
If it was just a physical mistake,
yeah,
fine. But these are mental mistakes. So
you don't know the read. You don't know the read of where he's supposed to go with the ball.
I know that when it's second and long, you can't continually throw checkdowns to Ralph, yeah, expecting him to break tackles.
Fair. So can you compare the comments that Trevor Harris made? So I will say this: I liked what Mac Beth said.
Okay,
because he took ownership and it was genuine. He took ownership. Then Trevor Harris's comments that we just heard
kind of couched it. It's like the apologies celebrities give. If I offended anyone,
right?
What do you mean if?
Right?
Are you apologizing or not?
Right. Right. I see. Trevor Harris's comments bothered me because Trevor Harris, his comment was to the media: if you want to put it on me, put it on me. I'll take it because I'm the leader of this team. What do you mean if you want to put it on me? That's being defensive. You're being defensive right away. First of all, if it's on, and then I'll take it because I'm the leader. Well, if it's on you, then say, hey, it's on me. And don't say if you want to put it on me, because that's basically saying, hey, it's not on me,
but
if you want to put it on me, I'll take it because I'm a leader. If you're the leader, then you just say it's on me and leave it at that, and don't announce that you're the leader and that's why you're taking it. It's not really on me, but I'm a leader, so I'm going to take it. That's some BS.
That's a little passive aggressive.
I saw right through that. But Mac Best, I thought was genuine.
And it's funny, I actually don't think it is on Trevor Harris. Like, he didn't have his best game, but I don't think he is.
Oh, no, he's been great.
I don't think anyone would say he's the issue with the Edmonton Eskimos, which takes us to Mike Riley. Because to me, a leader, you don't have to say that to the media, which is my issue with option one and option two that we've discussed.
Right.
You say less, because you're saying it in the film room, in the meeting rooms, on the practice field. You're leading by example. You're leading while it's happening. You don't have to lead for the cameras. So Mike Riley, who is frustrated with everything, frustrated that he even has to address it, and then when he's asked how frustrated he is, he's frustrated that you can't even tell how frustrated he is. And he's already answered that question.
You have to ask me if I'm frustrated?
So to me, the if we're talking about comments that were genuine,
yeah,
Mike Riley's were the most genuine because he didn't want that escape to be the leader guy. He is the leader guy. He doesn't need to tell you how much he's leading or how angry or upset he is or how bad he wants to win. It's self-evident.
Right.
But that's just what I
think.
That's
just you.
At Donovan Bennett, hit me off in the mentions. Let us know what you think. The real question, though, because, I mean, we could nitpick on media quotes. The real question is, does what these guys say to an assembled member of people scrumming them around their locker while they're toweling off, which is still, to me, one of the most awkward and unnecessary things we do in the media.
Like, eyes up, DJ. Eyes up.
Yeah. Like, if aliens came down and, like, were evaluating everything we do, the post-game locker room scrum, they'd be like, really? Like, this is the best way to disseminate information from a star player? This is what you guys are doing still? Anyways, as I continue to derail the podcast, does what those guys say matter moving forward to anyone else in the locker room? Like, will they analyze it the way we just did?
Yes.
Okay. Why?
Because we as players, we watch TSN. We go to CFL.ca. We read and we watch what the post-game comments were. We do. And we analyze them without knowing that we're analyzing them. We judge them without knowing that we judge them. And we see how, especially after a loss. I mean, after a win, a big win, you might watch to see your highlights. But you're not rushing to see what guys said. If you take a bad loss, you want to see what guy, you want to see what the coach says, how he responds. You want to see how the player who didn't have a good game, or maybe he did, or what he says about his teammates, what his tone is, what he says. For sure, you're watching. That's of course. So then, guys will react to that. You never, very, very rarely is that brought up. hey, I heard you say this in the post game. You don't hear that unless somebody goes way out of pocket and says something they shouldn't say. Then, you know, the media relations guy or the coach will address it. Guys don't talk about it, but behind closed doors or in a car ride to practice, you might talk about, you hear what DJ said on here or here? DJ said this. Hey, what? He said that? What do you think he meant by that? Oh, I know what he meant by that. I mean, it happens for sure. I don't think there was anything that was said out of those three comments. I don't think there was anything said that's worthy of any teammates thinking those were bad. I actually thought they were – I thought that two of them were genuine and one was just a guy talking. And it is what it is.
Saskatchewan, BC, that was my favorite game to watch this week. Lots of offense. Shout out to Solly. Seven tackles, one sack against the former team. We knew he was going to be geeked up to play them. Love to see that. They play again this week. We're going to break down this week's matchups in a minute, but I'm looking to see if there's any adjustments. Speaking of guys still doing it, shout out to Marcus Thigpen. Mm-hmm. Still doing the damn thing. Another kick return.
He doesn't touch the ball enough.
That's facts. Another return TD this year. We have 8 kick return TDs this year. Remember when we talked about what has now become an abbreviated preseason in terms of how teams are dealing with their rosters, when they're making cuts, how they're using those preseason games, and what the unintended consequences of that was going to be? Remember that?
I don't remember what the unintended consequences were going to be.
We talked about the fact that it...
Tackling.
Tough for new guys to... Americans, especially, to make it into the league because you got less of a runway to show yourself. Also tough to really evaluate those guys who are going to be playing on teams for you often.
Right.
But it's tough to practice teams. If half of the preseason is going to be used as a dress rehearsal for week one, training camp often is a lot of teamwork because you don't have time throughout the year to get in all that drill work. Are we seeing so many return TDs, which some people would say is good special teams play? I think more often than not, when there's a return TD, it's a bad special teams play, an athlete making a play. Stay in your lane! The special teams coaches are always screaming. We've seen so many return TDs because of the erosion of special teams play?
That's a good question. That goes to the question that the comment you just made. Is that a good play? Or is it a great return? Or is it a bad? Stay in your lane. Don't lose contain. Outside arm free.
Yes, yes.
That's a good. I mean, some returns. I guess it goes both ways. You saw Lucky Whitehead's return last week where he didn't get touched.
Mm-hmm.
That's just bad coverage. There's other ones where a guy makes people miss, and that's just a good return. So I don't know, DJ. I think you bring up a valid point. I don't know how you would quantify that. I'm sure that Steve Daniels or somebody could tell you what the numbers are, and then special team coaches can tell you if it's a product of, and I guess the guys returning, the teams that have good return units and are making these big returns. Winnipeg has, I believe, the most. They have the most big plays in the league after 6 weeks. I know that for sure.
Oh, they do, because I thought you said their offense was not explosive.
To be honest with you, they have the most big plays, but half. I think they have 19 big plays, which are 20-yard runs, 30-yard receptions, or I don't know what the number is for. I think 40-yard returns. Half of those are on special teams. Four on kick returns. Anyway, they do lead, to your point, and you are correct. Let's get that straight right now. You're correct. They have the most big plays offensively in the league as well. But but what was I saying? I was saying the fact of the teams that are having those returns, they would say that it's a product of a good return. The teams that are out of their lanes, that are giving up big returns, Toronto, they might say, hey, it's partially a product of not having as much time to work on teams, to go three-quarter speed, to go in pads, to fit up, to tackle, to stay in our lanes, to work out the new players. they would say that part, that's part of the issue. So I think you'll get a couple different answers if you ask a couple different people, but probably you would get a sprinkle of each, which all makes what's happened after 6 weeks, what's happened.
I'm going to run on a campaign.
Okay.
Make special teams great again. I'm going to start getting the red hats. Mm. I remember a day.
I can't wait.
When a kicker could execute a coffin corner 10 times out of 10. We need to make special teams great again. Actually, before we move to this week, I just got a shout out. To me, the best player of the week this week was Charleston Hughes. 10 tackles, 3 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. Beast. A nightmare.
Absolute beast.
Ugh, he is still getting it done. Still a terror. As we look forward to week 7.
Can we mention player of the week from that same game?
Who?
Shaq Evans.
Oh, okay. I mean,
Shaq Evans had a buck 54. He leads that. Shaq Evans leads the league in big plays from a receiver standpoint. He's become Shaq Evans, I believe, is a guy who has shown that he is a future all-star in this league. Great body control, a bigger receiver, at least in a thickness. He's not that tall, but he's a 210-pound guy, 6 feet, a thicker lower body, tough to tackle, and proven that Cody Fajardo, when he has one-on-one and he sees Shaq Evans running down the field, even though he's covered, he's putting it up because of the body control, the big body, and the willingness to go up and make a catch in traffic. That's that combination plus the routes he runs. I think he's become somebody who is on a trajectory to be an all-star in this league at receiver.
Can I ask you a stupid question?
It's probably not stupid, but go ahead.
How many Shaqs did we have before Shaquille O'Neal?
We checked this the other day. He was born before Shaq was drafted in NBA.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
It's funny. Someone just mentioned that yesterday. So he was born before Shaq went to the NBA.
Wow.
Yeah. So I doubt. So there was probably not named after the LSU Shaq. He wasn't that. Unless you're a huge hoops fan.
You love the movie Blue Chips.
Yeah. Right.
With a name like Shaq, you have to be athletic. Kind of,
yeah.
No?
You got to go get it.
I can't wait for we're probably still about 10-15 years away from a bunch of Davises.
Yeah,
to be across the league. Just these shutdown corners.
Yeah,
with gloves undone.
Yeah, long, super long towels that you could likely trip over. Yeah.
This week, week 7, doubleheader on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Get our football in early this week. Mm-hmm. Calgary goes to Ottawa. We'll see what the quarterback situation is like in the nation's capital.
They say he needs another week. Dom Davis needs another week, so it'll be JJ again. Toronto at Edmonton.
Winnipeg at Hamilton is your Friday night football matchup. Really, that's the matchup that
that's the one
we want to see. Yeah. And then
those two teams are top of the league in most statistical categories, both offensively, or a lot of the important statistical categories offensively and defensively.
Yeah. Then 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. It's a family day matchup. Sask going to BC. That rubber match, if you will. And that's a big swing. But really, I don't think BC wants to lose another game to a Western opponent, especially at home. But the game that is the game of the year thus far might be a Grey Cup preview. Winnipeg versus Hamilton. Hamilton has 8 games left against the West, only 5 more against the East. And Hamilton has struggled against the West in recent years. What specifically are you looking for in that matchup?
Let me pull up Hamilton's wins here, because I had pulled this up, and this was interesting. You could probably, if you don't see it, where is it? Maybe it's in last week's notes. But I had the wins that Hamilton had and Winnipeg had, and it rose this question to me, and that is, what's a quality win? If you look at who Hamilton has beaten, it's all, and it's because Mike Riley is getting beat up in BC.
Yeah.
Bo Levi Mitchell's been injured. Mm-hmm. Zach Collaros, this is all thinking about guys entering the league that would be some of the top quarterbacks. Other than Hamilton themselves and Trevor Harris, there's not a lot of quality wins versus teams with their starting quarterback.
Right.
Because so many guys are either not playing, their team's not playing well, or they're banged up themselves. So in Hamilton, we have Sask week one, which there was no Zach because Zach was out in the first few minutes. Week two, they played Ottawa. Obviously, Ottawa won the game with Dom Davis. And then week three, that's not Hamilton. Hamilton week three was Montreal. Week four was Hamilton. Where was that? Yeah, that's Montreal again. And Calgary with Elbeau. So we're playing again, and it's the same thing goes for Winnipeg. So they're playing. What's your point? My point is that the quality wins would be in question, but what are the quality teams? If you're not talking about Winnipeg and you're not talking about Hamilton right now, other than Edmonton, to me, what are the quality teams up until now? Because Montreal, you can't say that because up until last week, you wouldn't have believed that. So what would you consider a quality win? Because the rest of the teams are without their starting quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, Calgary has still been decent without their starting quarterback, but
they've been very good. That's what I'm saying. It's just that they've, you know, so it's hard for me to, anyway, so my point is these are the two, these are the two best teams in the league right now, and they're going head up. What I want to see in the matchup is can Winnipeg win in a shootout? That's always going to be the question. People will question the numbers from Winnipeg. I'm not questioning offensively. I'm not questioning their numbers because Matt Nichols has the best quarterback efficiency rating. He has more big plays than any other quarterback this year, and that's one of the things that people are always going to say, can he connect on a deep ball? Can he make big plays? Well, he has more than anybody else. In the red zone, he's the most efficient quarterback right now. They're at like 78% touchdowns when they enter the red zone, giving up 20% on the other side. So, I mean, that to me is the question would be, Hamilton's going to put up points. Regardless of how good you think Winnipeg's defense is, Hamilton at home is going to put up points. So can Winnipeg match them?
Well, we're going to see if Hamilton's real. And maybe if Montreal can give them a push in the East, or if it even matters if they're real, because they got Saskatchewan next week. So then over the next 2 weeks, we're going to see if they're real. But, I mean, I think part of your point is that there aren't a lot of elite quarterbacks still standing right now. Nichols is obviously the starter in Winnipeg still. But Calgary lost their starter. Edmonton's Trevor Harris. Saskatchewan lost their starter. BC is going to lose their starter if they don't start blocking. Hamilton. But Montreal lost their starter. Ottawa lost their starter. Toronto lost their starter. Like,
right.
Over half the league is without their starting quarterback. Right. And we're, you know, a month and a half into the season. Someone that Hamilton's going to be without for this tough stretch, Simone Lawrence, because he appealed his suspension.
He was a bad boy.
Suspension was upheld, which I think we all kind of knew was going to happen. And some would say, I've seen, you know, on some Tiger Cat blogs, oh, you should have just taken the suspension then. We need you now. Well, no, I think you play it out and see what happens. I actually think if you're just talking about strategy and not just owning up to the fact that clearly was a bad hit and that two games was more than fair. I actually think strategically it's not bad now because Simone gets like a little bye a third through the season that he wouldn't have needed at the beginning of the year when he was already fresh.
Yeah, I agree.
So he's gonna come back. He's going to let all those little nicks and bumps heal over the next 2 weeks. And he's going to come back in the middle of the year energetic and ready to go. And then he's going to have the natural byes with the rest of the team.
I agree.
Before we wrap, anything you need to get off your chest? Because I feel like this was me just venting to you.
No, I definitely. 40 some odd minutes. No, I have my fair share of venting to you for 40 something minutes, so I think it's fair. Anything that jumped out at me, let me look at my notes, see if I missed anything that I wanted to touch on here. I think we're pretty good, Deej. I think I got everything off my chest. That I wanted to. I look forward to this week. I'm on vacay I'm on vacay this weekend, so I will be. I won't be in the studio. I will be somewhere at a cottage watching the games with one of those TVs with an antenna, hoping to get the signal.
You have a cottage?
I don't have a cottage.
I was about to say, you are rich.
I definitely don't have a cottage. But yeah, it's going to be a good weekend. That Friday, I mean, there's a lot of interesting games. The rematch on Saturday is also going to be good. Manny Arsenal said post game that I'll paraphrase here, but he said we have to show them, the Lions, that what they put on tape today, this is after last week's game, is who they are. And sometimes you could be complacent in a back-to-back game, but we have to come out early and show them that what they showed on film is who they are.
I've always felt this in sports, but football more so than any other sport, doubly so than any other sport. It is tough to beat a team 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
Just human nature, the team that loses is going to make more adjustments. They're going to have the ear of their players in terms of the coaching staff. It just is. And you go into a game after winning thinking that everything you did that worked is going to work again.
Right. And it usually doesn't.
And it doesn't, because that other team is going to look at the things that didn't work for them and make the necessary adjustments. So I really think it's tough to beat a team 2 weeks in a row, which is why I think this return matchup is going to be fun.
Hey, these chairs are really high to where I can't put my feet in the ground. Either
have you
can
lost
you.
Circulation?
Yeah, but just like my feet are dangling in the air, which is kind of funny. It reminds me, there was somebody on one of our lovely networks was doing interviews, and he's the only one I ever see in the podium who sits down on the podium. And you can see his little legs dangling from the podium chair while he's got like these 6-8 guys sitting next to him, which you can guess who it is. But it's funny to watch. It reminds me of him right now, sitting at the podium with my legs dangling, not touching the ground. I'm not that short, though, just the way this table's set up.
I'm a grown man, and I need a booster seat when I go to restaurants, so this is not.
I sometimes use a block when I'm doing stuff with Brody so I can get a little bit taller, because Brody is legit tall.
Don't give away your seat.
I don't care.
So that's it for us here at the Waggle. Listen, fans, before we let you go, each and every week this podcast is brought to you not just by us here at the CFL, CFL.ca. It's brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips. Listen, you can get the MVP experience, the haircut, the massage with the shampoos, the hot steam towels, plus sports on TV, hockey, baseball, basketball, and football, of course. But the legendary haircuts and the sports, that's why you go to Sport Clips. You can book your appointment online. It's sportclips.ca. That's right, sportclips.ca. That's it. This has been the Waggle. This has been fun.
How about an awkward high five? No, higher. A little bit higher. Holla.
Later.